Welcome to True Crime Cat Lawyer. I'm your host, Elise, and sometimes my cat Winston joins me. This podcast contains content of a graphic nature that might not be suitable for all listeners, including descriptions of violence, sexual assault, and crimes against animals and children. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome back to Season 4, Episode 3 of True Crime Cat Lawyer. I decided that for Season 4, I wanted to re-record some of our earlier cases so that they sound better. So every other week, I'll be bringing you a revamped case. Some of these have been off the air for at least a year, so there's probably a lot of you listening who haven't actually heard these cases since we first covered them so early on. If you don't like this format, don't worry. On the alternating weeks, I'll be bringing you brand new cases. Okay, without further ado, let's get into today's case, the mysterious disappearance of Nancy Moyer. This was one of the first cases I knew I wanted to cover when I started this podcast. But when I started to really dive into this case, my head started spinning. There are so many twists and turns, it's hard to know what rabbit holes are worth going down. So let's start at the beginning. Nancy Moyer grew up in Olympia, Washington, which is the capital of the state. She went to college at Central Washington University and majored in accounting. She met a man named Bill while she was temping at his office in the accounting department. The two eventually got married after Nancy graduated, and Nancy landed a job as a financial analyst for the Washington State Department of Ecology. Nancy and Bill had two daughters, and by all accounts, Nancy loved being a mother. But by 2007, Nancy and Bill's marriage had fizzled and the two separated. According to Bill, the separation was amicable and the two remained on good terms in order to co-parent their girls. Jumping ahead to 2009, Nancy was living in Tenino, Washington, just outside of Olympia and only 75 miles from the city of Seattle. After her separation from Bill, Nancy got several tattoos and began engaging in a more active social life. This seems at least in part to have stemmed from the fact that she rotated visitation with Bill every other weekend, so she had more time for herself and to go out. The weekend of March 6, 2009 was Bill's weekend with the girls. He would return the girls to Nancy on Sunday the 8th. Nancy would have the weekend to herself, but she didn't tell Bill her plans. After all, they were separated and she probably didn't consider it to be his business. Neither Bill nor Nancy could have anticipated that March 6th would be the last time that they'd ever see each other. Sunday rolled around and Bill drove to Nancy's house to drop off the girls. Nancy's car was parked in the driveway, but the front door was ajar, which was odd to Bill. Nancy's cell phone and purse were still in the house and so were her keys. Bill knew Nancy was a frequent walker, but it didn't make sense that she would leave her keys inside the house and leave the front door open. Bill made some calls around to people who knew Nancy, but no one had heard from her since Friday the 6th. Bill took the girls back to his house and kept trying to get in touch with Nancy. When Nancy didn't show up for work on Monday the 9th, Bill reported her missing. The Thurston County Sheriff's Department was called in to help the local police department with the investigation. When detectives arrived at Nancy's house, her car was still parked in the driveway. When investigators went into the house, they first noticed two glasses of wine on the counter, as well as Nancy's purse and keys. Her driver's license, credit cards, and checkbook were all left inside the house. There were no signs of forced entry or a struggle. The only thing missing from Nancy's house was a long brown coat with fur-type lining along the bottom. I should note, there are conflicting reports as to whether or not Nancy actually had a cell phone at this time. Bill said that Nancy had a cell phone in the Disappeared episode I watched, but there's also reports that Nancy got rid of it and had a prepaid phone instead, which of course can't be traced. Investigators started with a timeline of events. They knew what time Bill picked up the girls on Friday the 6th, and using bank records, they were able to figure out that Nancy went to the grocery store around 6:45 p.m. A Tenino police officer who was running radar in the area around Nancy's house saw Nancy unloading groceries from her car between 9 and 9:30 p.m. He told Thurston County Sheriffs that she was alone. This was the last sighting of Nancy. Because Nancy's door was left ajar, detectives obtained her utility usage information to narrow down the time frame for when Nancy likely disappeared. There was a spike in heating between 9 p.m. Friday night and 12 a.m. Saturday morning, which is when police believed that Nancy went missing. But the question still remained, where was Nancy? While the husband or ex-husband is always a suspect, Bill's ruled out fairly quickly since he was with his daughters on the 6th and he agreed to take a polygraph, which he passed. So in order to figure out what happened to Nancy and where she might be, investigators started looking closer at the intimate details of her post-marital life. According to the Disappeared episode, there was a private side of Nancy that not many people knew about. Nancy's lifestyle changed after her separation. She started bar hopping and meeting people, eventually engaging in hookups and discreet relationships with these unknown individuals. No one knew who any of these men were or who she was spending time with, so investigators had no idea who they should interview. As the investigation continued, police discovered that Nancy had dated a few men from her office. Once they knew about the intricacies of her dating life, investigators were able to track down the men they wanted to interview. They started with one of Nancy's co-workers, a man named Matt. He claims the two were just friends. Matt also claimed that Nancy told him she would be relaxing at home for the weekend. He provided an alibi, telling investigators that he was with his wife and son, so he was eventually ruled out as a suspect. The next potential suspect police looked at was a man named William, who had a brief relationship with Nancy. He might have been a co-worker of Nancy's, but the reports weren't entirely clear. William was interviewed by police, and they found out that he was a sex offender. It's not clear from the information I used for this episode whether or not Nancy knew this. William told police that he ended their relationship, and evidently he provided a reliable alibi because he was also cleared by police. The next two men I'm going to discuss have never been officially named as suspects or persons of interest in Nancy's disappearance, nor have they been arrested or charged in connection with Nancy's disappearance. Like I mentioned earlier, Nancy dated a few of her coworkers. One of these coworkers was a man named Jim Roth. He told investigators that he had a brief fling with Nancy and went on a few dates with her, but he gave conflicting reports about their sexual relationship. First, he told police that he was unable to perform, but later he changed his story and said that the two had sex at his house. Roth told police that he had his sons on Friday the 6th, which was supposedly confirmed by his sons, but they were never actually interviewed by police. Roth said he went to Nancy's house on Saturday night. Investigators felt like the only reason he told them this was to explain away his fingerprints or DNA if they were found in Nancy's house. Interestingly, only Nancy's prints were found at her house. There was no foreign DNA or fingerprints. Roth agreed to take a polygraph, but the results were inconclusive. About a year later, in August 2010, Bernard Howell was pulled over by a Thurston County Sheriff's deputy. Howell was a door-to-door meat salesman with a history of mental health issues. When the deputy looked inside Howell's car, he saw the body of a woman, later identified as Rhonda Boone, wrapped up in a sleeping bag in the passenger seat of the car. Howell was arrested and charged with Rhonda's murder. Rhonda had her throat slit, she suffered blunt force trauma to the head, and she was either strangled or smothered. Howell later admitted to having sex with Rhonda's corpse. He was sentenced to almost 27 years in prison. Prior to Rhonda's murder, Howell had no criminal record. So what does Bernard Howell have to do with Nancy's disappearance? That remains somewhat unknown. Authorities interviewed Howell in 2011 after Nancy's daughters identified him as the man who sold meat to their mom. Howell denied ever meeting Nancy, and he was adamant that he had no connection to her disappearance. No evidence was found linking Howell to Nancy's case. But there's just something weird about his connection to the case. Is it really just a coincidence that he sold meat to Nancy just prior to her disappearance? A new detective, Detective Elkin, took over the case in January 2012. Detective Elkin re-interviewed Jim Roth in 2013. Roth did himself zero favors by making inconsistent statements about the sexual aspects of his relationship with Nancy. He claimed that he had sex with Nancy, but didn't recall her having tattoos. Roth then said that he went to Nancy's house on Friday night, not Saturday night, which also contradicted his earlier statements. Police narrowed down the time frame of Nancy's disappearance to between 9 and 12, So if Roth was there Saturday night, he was probably lying, or he was in Nancy's house by himself. But if he was there on Friday night, that's even worse for him, because that's the night Nancy actually went missing. Unfortunately, police couldn't hold Roth based on these inconsistent statements, and they had to let him go. Nancy's disappearance was reclassified to a nobody homicide in 2013 in order to expand Detective Elkins' available resources for the case. Despite the reclassification, the case remained cold. In 2017, Jim Roth died of natural causes. Whatever information he had about Nancy's disappearance died with him. The most recent and puzzling development came in 2019, 10 years after Nancy went missing. Eric Roberts called 911 on July 9th, claiming that he strangled Nancy with a scarf during rough sex. So who the heck is Eric Roberts, and why would he make this confession? Roberts was a former coworker of Nancy's at the Department of Ecology. He recanted his confession on July 10th, but the police were already in the process of conducting a search of his property after his confession directed police to a fire pit that might have contained Nancy's remains. Despite the property search, no remains were ever found. Roberts was never formally charged for Nancy's murder due to the lack of evidence. But police did arrest Roberts for unlawful possession of dangerous weapons and unlawful possession of a short firearm following the search. Roberts was also later arrested on fourth-degree assault and domestic violence charges, but the victim, his son, declined to press charges. Roberts has denied any involvement in Nancy's disappearance, but he remains a person of interest in the case. Roberts gave a 4.5-hour interview to the podcast Hide and Seek, where he said he confessed to the murder because of the prescription drugs he was on. He claimed he never had sex with Nancy, never had Nancy over to his house, and he claimed he never mentioned anything about a scarf. All of this is contradicted in the recorded statement that he made to police. In that statement, Roberts claimed that Nancy attacked him and he accidentally killed her. Roberts stated he was on drugs and alcohol at the time and didn't realize that Nancy was dead. His whole story is bizarre, and it makes it hard to figure out what is truth and what is fiction. And it's hard to know why he'd make up such an elaborate lie, if it really is a lie. A final interesting fact about Robert is that while he denied having a sexual relationship with Nancy, his nephew, Aaron Huntley, actually dated Nancy before she disappeared. Police said that Huntley was visibly upset during his interview with police, and he was crying and clenching his fists. Police appeared to have ruled Huntley out as a suspect and a person of interest, though it's not clear why. Investigators say that the investigation is open and ongoing, and that there are suspects in the case who have not been publicly named or identified by police. There's been no activity on Nancy's credit cards or bank accounts since her disappearance on March 6, 2009. She hasn't been seen since that date. If you have any information on the disappearance of Nancy Moyer, please call the Thurston County Sheriff's Office at 360-786-5500. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Please subscribe and leave a review if you like the show. You can email case suggestions or comments to truecrimecatlawyer@gmail.com. The links for our social media pages are included in the show notes. And if you want more content, head over to Patreon to join one of our available tiers. Finally, if you're interested in learning more about my co-host, you can check out her Instagram at WinstonTheCatPDX. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned for our next episode.